So after he sent me that and we talked about it, Stephen had a couple more days off, and he said he was going to go camp out at his grandmother's place. And his grandmother has probably a 2-acre lake, and it's like bordering Talladega National Forest. Until recently, we kind of found out there's actually a Bigfoot hotspot. And so the first time he took Jennifer up there, his wife, and they heard what some people call the bionic owl. And Stephen was laughing. He said they heard the coyotes. They heard a normal owl. Then the bionic owl, like an owl on steroids, came up. And he said Jennifer jumped up. I was like, that's not an owl. That ain't an owl. That ain't no owl. And they packed up and left that night. Jennifer said she wasn't staying there. But she still doesn't technically believe in Bigfoots. But she said that wasn't an owl and she wasn't staying there that night. So they packed up and left. And he didn't get any recording in anything. But a few weeks later, Stephen and his son went and camped out up there. And Jonathan told them that he thinks they have Bigfoots coming onto the property since it's bordering the national forest. And since no one goes on his grandmother's property, it's growed up real bad, that, you know, it's probably a safe haven. So Stephen, Will, and Hunter, they go up there and they camp out. And they heard howls again. This time they were a good ways away. But if you hear a howl and you hear the coyotes, you can tell the difference. There's no doubt about it. And he said the same thing. He heard a howl, the coyotes started up, and he heard another one, and the coyotes just shut up. Didn't make a peep. And they didn't hear anything else, and they came back, and he told me about it. So right now, we are trying to buy some type of vocal recorder that can record better long distances. And cell phones and regular just camcorders. And we're actually planning on going back to the LBL. Stephen told me he's got 4 days off at the end of August. And my next place that I would like to go, we're still planning on trying to get to camp at the base of Mount St. Helens and maybe try to hike to Ape Canyon. But it's either somewhere in Louisiana or somewhere in Texas, the Big Thicket. We had a lot of people tell us that you would get activity there. And so Stephen has bought him a AR-15, 5.56. And this week I'm buying mine from a guy, a 300 Blackout AR-15, just for, I don't think it's sort of, gives you a little comfort, but it doesn't. I don't know if I told you, but like, as far as being just a novice researcher, I couldn't have a better friend than Stephen. If I show him something that I'm looking at something about getting, before I can even say, is in my cart at Amazon? Oh, I already got it. I just bought it. I just bought it. I just bought it. And like, he's ready to go. We've talked about taking trips to Alaska, Northern California. We've been to the Bigfoot Museum in Georgia, going to the big one in Texas, the big one in California. So we told people about our encounters. It's about 50-50. You have certain people like, well, you never know what's in those woods. And then you have the other half say, well, there's no such thing as that. But a lot of the people that do not believe in that will not go out in the woods with you at all. And they're like, well, why are you scared? It's something in the woods. We know it's something in the woods. Oh, and one of the times that Stephen, Will, and Hunter camped out at his grandmother's place, they were actually going to camp in the National Forest, Talladega National Forest. And for some reason, that huge National Forest area that borders his grandmother's property, every gate was locked. They locked everything. You can give an explanation or nothing. You couldn't get in no kind of way. They had everything. It wasn't a holiday. It was no storms coming through. They just locked everything down. And from some of the research and the studies we did, they say if they migrate through that area like that, and I do believe the National Forest people or National Rangers and people know these creatures exist. And if they're migrating through that territory, they shed it down, keep people from being in there until they move on out and back up. And that's pretty much what's my experience. I think I probably missed out on a lot of stuff, but it freaks you out when something that shouldn't exist and it happens to you. And me and him have both on YouTube listened to so many stories about encounters and listened to all the vocals. And to have it actually happen to you, it blows your mind. And there's so many other things that now that we've kind of dove in the deep end, it makes you wonder about a lot of things. Like for me, no bears in a huge national forest. All of a sudden, the rangers come in and just lock the gates and keep everybody out of this national forest. No camping at all. The lady kind of laughing it off the first time we mentioned it. And the laugh was, it wasn't a funny laugh as if someone was telling a joke. It was a laugh like, okay. She wouldn't even look at us in the eyes when she did the laugh, but she did pull out a map and was asking Steven, where did we camp it? And he was showing her like, well, we camped in this area. And it's like, okay, this area. And you can see the numbers on the map that she had. It's like, yeah, we camped it. It was either 138 or 338, 337. Like, okay. And that's the night that we camped at the bottom of that ridge that the Jeep came down on us. And to this day, I do believe that they sent people in there to move those creatures out. I don't know, maybe to keep us safe. I do believe they have a way of tracking them. They know how they migrate. And like I was telling people at work, LBL is small compared to, say, the wilderness and the forest out in the Pac West, Oregon, Washington State. And I say, if it's bigger and thicker than what we went to, where you just pretty much lose all daylight, at 12 o'clock noon, you don't know what's in there. And that was pretty much our encounter. The people I told about it, my brother, my sister, cousins, they laugh, but they believe. And it's a funny story because my sister is married to a federal agent, FBI agent, my brother-in-law. And so we both ride motorcycles. So as we're sitting there talking about motorcycles, sport bikes, I just get off the subject and say, man, why are y'all keeping all information about Bigfoot a secret? And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, y'all keeping all the stuff secret. Y'all quieting people off. And his exact word, he said, well, I don't know about that. I don't know anything about it. That's above my pay grade. That's out of my field. So he didn't deny it, but he was like, that's above my pay grade. That's out of my field. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, you're a counterterrorism, but dealing with Bigfoot and stuff is out of, you know, above your pay grade. Yeah. The government knows about a lot of these cryptids in the United States and across the world. That's just my opinion and Stephen's opinion. And that's pretty much with my story.
If you did leave any of your experiences out, please don't feel bad, because you sure did share a lot of interesting ones with us. Wow, you've had a lot of experiences.
Once you actually have an encounter, things started adding up. Before we went on our first camping trip, we actually went to the Bigfoot Museum in Georgia. And Stephen came back. This was before he even had the tent put on his truck. He had to actually have to set the tent up on the ground. And he went back over there to the mountains of Georgia, Blue Ridge Mountains. him and Will camped out. And for some reason, we had a really bad temperature drop. The thunderstorm missed them, but the winds were like gusting on top of the mountain. And I didn't get a chance to go, but he took pictures of a tree break. And if you just show it, just walk up and say, look at this tree, bro. People are like, oh, okay. But the tree break is like 8 feet off the ground. And it's not just like snapped like a toothpick. It's twisted. But there's no other trees around it. Now, we both are kind of skeptical about the structures. But he took pictures of that tree break. And it's like, yeah. After my sighting, I think I, this is a funny story. After my first sighting going up to the hunt club, I actually went back. I think it was about a week and a half. Might have been the very next weekend. And during the off season, I go up to the hunt club and I scout and I find signs of a, what I think is a good buck or whatever. You usually don't tell anybody about it, but the guys at the hunt club, they'll be like, okay, if I'm hunting this same area over and over again, okay, Eric has got a good buck over there. I'm not going to hunt over there. We call it blacktopping when someone comes in on them. So I'm hunting this area and, it's an 8 point come up behind me. It's a little box eight, not big body, but not a nice rack. And, all of a sudden this deer just bolts. So I'm like, oh, well, I wasn't going to take him anyway. And right behind me, I hear a grunt and I'm in my lock on. I got it like 30 feet up in this tree. Turn around. It's the dominant buck coming. Long story short, I had a drag coming to my stand. And he was following the drag. And when he stood up and I seen how big he was, I just pulled the trigger. I didn't even put the scope on him. And he kind of like ran off. So one of the newer hunters came in and he said, well, did you get him? I'm like, I don't think so. So he said, well, let me help you look for him. He came up in the woods and he walked around. He's like, oh my God, do you see all the rubs and streaks? And I'm looking at him like, that's why I'm hunting up in here. So that was on a Saturday. No, that was on a Friday. So the very next day, I was going back hunting, but I woke up late and I got to the hunt club late. And we got the meeting place. So we got this building that's got a map of the hunt club. We call it the peg out board. So as I'm walking to peg out to my same area that I've been hunting this whole time, the guy that came in on me that to help me look for the deer, he called me and he said, Eric, where you hunting at? Like, am I hunting that area where I've always been hunting at? He was like, well, I got that area pegged out. And I kind of like gave him a funny look. He's like, cause you can't use anybody else's stand unless they give you permission. And I wasn't going to give him permission. So he said, yeah, after you left, they camped out at the hunt club. I went in at night and hung a stand. And he was telling me, such and such just missed a big buck crossing in front of him over in this area. And I don't know if I told you, the hunt club at that time, the land leases with the paper company leases, I think we had 4,600 acres. And I've been in the hunt club over 20 years and I still hadn't seen the whole hunt club. And so I just get teed off and I just like walk past Tommy and he's the president. No, he's the vice president at that time. And he's like, you know, we'll address it later. You know, that's just sorry. They know you've been hunting there all this time and they just go in on them. And so I go off in an area that I'd never been before. And you know, Tommy told me like, well, it's a shooting house down this road. And it was just a bad day. I get to the area and the gate is up and I can't find my key to unlock the gate. So Tommy had told me, said, well, the shooting house is only maybe 50 yards down and you take a right, go up a hill. So it's pitch black dark. I'm walking. I can't find a shooting house. I got my little flashlight. It's so dark that the light of the flashlight is reflecting back on me that you really can't see that far. And of course, crazy things start going through your mind. So I'm walking. And, you know, you can hear critters running around, you know, maybe squirrels, raccoon, whatever. The whole time when I just said, forget it, I'm not going to hunt. The whole time I'm walking, because I didn't want to get lost, I had my rifle set, loaded, and cocked. It wasn't pointed at the ground. It was pointed 10 to 12 feet up in the air, up in the trees. And it didn't dawn on me to, like, I thought about it and told Steven, you know, if I'm worried about coyotes attacking me or jumping a deer in it running over me, why would I have my rifle pointed 10 feet, 12 feet up in the trees, up in the air? And that's why I shined my light at the whole time. It wasn't on the ground as I was walking. I would pan around, but my light was up in the trees. And I haven't hunted down there in a long time after that. When I did hunt, I never went in before daylight anymore. And I never stayed into pitch black dark anymore, where you have to have your flashlight to walk out. I never did that again. And I'm in that same hunting club, and I'm in another hunting club, and I do it to this day. I never go out before daylight, and I never stay in the woods until dark anymore. You know, it's just, I like to hunt, but it has freaked me out to the point. I wouldn't say I was scared, but I know there's things out there that if they wanted me, there's nothing I can do about it. So that's like one of the things that crosses your mind when we're sitting there thinking about the, I guess you call it, the adventures that me and Steven have been having.
One thing's for sure, you two don't frighten easily. Of course, you told us about the responses you had where you started to cry, but you still went out into the woods and did what you and Steven did, so that shows a lot of courage.
Well, that first night, when we got that first howl, and I told Steven, I asked him, so you ready to pack up? He thought I was joking. He bust out laughing. He said, pack up. I was like, yeah, pack up and let's go. And I was telling him the next day when we was talking about it, like, man, I was just terrified. I don't know where it came from. I have never felt anything like that in my life. And Steven is the type, Steven hates to leave. He would have stayed up there and camped and left there and got to work, took a shower and went to work. I was ready to go. In actuality, from that point, when we got the responses, I was ready to go. Because in my mind, I didn't think we was going to see anything. I didn't think we was going to hear anything. I just figured we'll get out. We'll do some hiking. We'll do some camping, do some fishing. We'll go see Hotel California. Just ride around all those back roads. And it just, I was glad that Steven was there. So if it happened to me by myself and I was telling him again something and he's like, oh, I missed it. I was glad that he was there and he heard it. He heard it before I did. And like I said, you could literally see the goosebumps running up and down his arms.
It sounds to me like you two really complement each other really well. So, yeah, sounds like you're a great team.
Yeah. He wants a sighting so bad, and he is so gung-ho about it. And I told him, Jennifer is eventually going to put a stop to you spending all this money on all the camping. Like, he has the thermal binoculars, the IR binoculars where you can... I had those where you can actually see in pretty much pitch black dark. That's what I used. I didn't use the thermal. I wanted to see. And then the funny part, I told him if I actually did see something staring back at me, I probably would have a heart attack. I probably would be so terrified I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. So I told him if that happens, if you see me just freeze up like a statue, I'm seeing something. But we did not go out walking around when we knew where those howls and those eight sounds were coming from. We talked about it. We made a lot of mistakes, but it's a learning progress. For, I think just for us being together, this is only our second outing where all of us, where we were together like that. We did Mississippi, Holly Springs, and Old Taylor Road, and I think it was the Sabine River and Lake Granada. We did all that. And what I like about it, Stephen likes to drive. I love that. I could just sit back and he would drive all day.
I don't blame you for liking that. If I'm going to go on a long trip, it's definitely better if I get to ride and someone else drives. So I hear you. The land that Hunting Club owns sounds to me like the perfect place for Sasquatch to hang out. You found out after the fact they had through Chris, but had you heard about any other hunters having sightings there before you had yours?
Not really sightings, but we had things that happened that was like really suspicious. Like the guy shoot a deer and he doesn't make a really good shot and the deer kind of run off. And like, okay, I know it happens a lot. Okay, so he's going to let the deer lay down and he's going to go get him. So he waits an hour or two. He go back and you can find where you track the deer and you can see where he laid down, a huge spot of blood. And then it's nothing. And you don't see any drops where the deer got up and moved again. You don't see where coyotes got it and tore it apart, where you see where they ripped off hair. You don't see anything. That happened a lot up there. And until I asked Chris about that, he told Larry, which was his dad, and Larry came up there and confirmed it. And I'm like, okay. And Chris didn't hunt. That was his favorite place to hunt because they actually named it Chris Shooting House or Chris Lane. I think it was Chris's Lane. That's what they named the little four-wheeler trail to get back there where he was hunting at. Chris didn't hunt that anymore. No one ever knew why, but he never hunt. He had a real bad motorcycle accident that forced him to stop hunting. He never hunted back there again. And for someone that's been hunting since they were 8, 9 years old, to hear something that spooked him that bad, that you would never go back to this place where you know you got big bucks on camera and this and that. Him, Kevin, and I think the guy's name, Wayne, had to go back in to get his climber that he left around the tree when he hopped in the truck when Larry came to pick him up. They went back in the daytime to get it. So I think people suspect and they kind of lean toward there's something out there. Because Tommy sends me a lot of Bigfoot memes that are funny, but to have someone come in on you that's trespassing on our property, and you ask them, you know, what are they doing? He said they was out there pooping and hollering and yapping, and they straightforward told them we were walking hoping to see a Bigfoot. All jokes aside, and it's like, you don't just pick up and just go walk out in the woods and, you know, I'm going to go see a Bigfoot. Unless something has sparked you, you done seen something, something got your mind going, well, this would be a good area to do this.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, you saw something. And speaking of seeing something, you and Lee Arthur were silent from the time you saw the Sasquatch until you got to the club. That tells me you two were rattled. And if that's the case, why'd you decide to go hunting that day still?
Well, I kid you not, that day was sort of like, I wouldn't say a blur, but it was like my head was in a fog. And I guess the author's head was in a fog too, because he actually had a deer walk out and he didn't even take a shot at it. It just felt like that. The whole day felt odd. I told Steve, I'm kicking myself right now for when I told Steven about it. Why didn't I slam on brakes? Why didn't I stop my Tahoe and get out, grab my cell phone, get a better look at it? And when you see something that pretty much your whole life, people have been saying, oh, there's someone in a costume. That's not real. And your mind is doing everything it can to disprove it. And it's like, no, it's right there in front of me. It just puts your head in a fog. My head was in a fog the whole time. And the whole time while I'm hunting, when we got to the hunt club and I put Lee Arthur in his stand and I go to my stand, it's just, I'm replaying, it's on a movie, it's on a loop. And I'm just replaying it over and over again, over and over again. Like I could see the doe stomping his feet. And I hear myself in my mind, like, she's not even looking at me. So why, you know, what's got her spooked? And as I turn and my lights hit this thing, and it's like, it looks right at us and it drops his head to, I guess, maybe to get the glare out of his eyes. And the grass was thick and it was, it wasn't green and it wasn't all the way dead. It was a light brownish color. And if you didn't know it was there and you just drove by real fast and you didn't see this, that's what caught us. It turned and we seen the eyes and we watched it drop its head. You would drive by it and you wouldn't even know. You would have to focus on it to look. And I don't know. It spooked me. No, I think it has stalked the deer. The way I tell Steve, it put me in mind of a cat or big cat stalking, and it's creeping up as fast as it can. And it was in like a perfect sprinter stance. And, I actually told about my encounter at this Bigfoot group, and a lot of the people that had sightings, one of the guys from North Carolina has them on his property, and he's a big time deer hunter, and he says, he sees it all the time. And I got into a lot of forums on Facebook for Bigfoot groups and asked about my encounter, and I would tell them. And a lady in Texas said the same thing. The guy in, I think Ohio said that it was in a stance like it was about to pounce. But this was the one that I seen. You could tell that it was one was in front of the other. You could tell that it was actually in a sprinter. That's the best way I can say it was in a sprinter stance. And I was thinking it may have not got the doe, but it would have got the yearling. And that's the best way I could tell you. Cause I actually, we was watching something. I don't know if it was the Olympics or something. And they got down to do I guess it's the 100 meters or whatever. And I jumped up and I'm pointing and I'm yelling at Steven. That's the way it was set up. That's how he was standing. That's what was going on. That's what I saw. And I don't know if you watch sprinters when they do it. When they get in their stance, their head is up first. And right before the gun goes off, they drop their head. And I'm sitting there yelling at Steven. I think it was Steven. Jennifer, I think we was at my ex-girlfriend's house. Her, Jason was there, and I'm yelling at them like, that's exactly, I'm reliving it all over again. And the only thing that kind of made me feel good about telling it, I'm pretty much a shy, quiet, I'm an introvert person. And whenever someone asked me about my encounter with this, what I saw, everybody said, I could see the passion that you're saying that I know you, and something happened for you to be telling this like that. You could see it in my eyes. The first time I told Stephen them, beads of sweat built up on my forehead. But I'm ready to see another one. But I would like to do it from a distance.
Well, I sure hope you do have another sighting someday. And after thinking about your sighting the way I'm sure you have, hopefully if you do have another sighting, you're actually able to enjoy it and not be so shocked. But time will tell on that. After seeing with your own eyes that Sasquatch really are out there, Eric, Did you put any restrictions in place on your kids that you hadn't put on them before that sighting?
The funny thing about it, after my sighting, me and my three boys, we fell into the Bigfoot lore on YouTube, just dove off in the deep end. That's where I actually found your show, Dogman Encounters. Like, we listened to everybody. And my kids wanted to be hunters, and now they don't. I didn't really put any restrictions on them, but I think they know their dad, and it's like, dad seen something and it spooked him. And if it spooked dad, you know, I'm not doing it. So my youngest is the only one that will actually hunt with me now, but he made it perfectly clear. He's not going in there before daylight, and he's not staying in the dark. So he's the only one that actually hunts. Well, he will hunt every once in a while with me, but those are the rules, the stipulations that he put on it if we do go hunting.
Does he realize they come out during the daytime too?
I think it's just a false sense of security. And that's one that I tried to explain to him. Like, you know, if you see one in the daytime, you're going to really, really see it good. I kid them all the time. I told them when they're joking with me about it, I was like, all three of y'all are faster than me right now, but I don't have to be the fastest. I can trip one of y'all. I can have some more kids. And you're like, oh, dad, I can't believe you say that. Can't believe you say that. But I wouldn't do that, though. But I'm not going to say they don't believe me. They believe their dad saw something that freaked them out really, really bad. And they don't want to take the chance to see it also.
Well, you never know. Someday they might see one with their own eyes and know for sure themselves. It's hard to say. But having said that, it's time for us to call it. But before we do, Eric, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing all those experiences with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share.
Well, you know you're welcome. Thanks again so much. Have a great night.
That's it for another episode of Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio with Vic Cundiff. If you've had a Sasquatch encounter and would like to be a guest on the show, please go to BigfootEyewitness.com and submit a report. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.